Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fanster Mai, good afternoon. We're open line on Man in Line through till 1 today, so the floor's yours. Lines are open on 66 13 68, text 166177, WhatsApp 166177, email studio at manxradio.com. Need a new passport? There's a new improved price. The second price rise in 6 months. A standard adult passport will cost you £100 from the 11th of next month. Up £7 from £93. They were last increased in October when they jumped from £85. Well, it's the cost of living, is it? £100 for a passport. An adult express passport has gone up from £165.50 to £178. An adult emergency passport's gone up from £204 to £219. The good news is, if you were born before the 2nd of September 1929, it's still free. Well, that's good news, isn't it? It's the cost of living, so if you need your passport and it's going to run out soon, well, how about that? Did you see Camilla yesterday, by the way? What did you think of the whole shindig? I was live, of course, at St Ninian's High School. Some interesting views from the students at St Ninian's High School, including the ones on vapes. I don't know whether you heard what they had to say about vapes yesterday. It just seems like there's a big problem, and something that obviously we need to get to the bottom of. But text, email, call and WhatsApp if you want to get in touch, by all means. Lots to talk about where that's concerned. I don't know whether you heard the children's champion Kerry Sharp, who was on talking about bad behaviour in schools on the Isle of Man, and she said basically tackling bad behaviour needs to be a top priority. It's after that new policy introduced at Ballacameen where students can use the loo under certain circumstances, and it's been implemented to in an attempt to tackle vandalism and bullying. So it's a sad fact. Vandalism and bullying have always been around in schools to a greater or lesser extent. I just wonder what's different about today? What's different about 2024? If you have a child, a student, a young person, I just wonder what your thoughts are. Parents, custodians, guardians, have a listen to Kerry Sharp, the children's champion, about what she has to say about bad behaviour in schools.
As children's champion, what I'm doing is I'm looking at this recent school policy and asking myself, well, is it in the best interest of the child? I suppose from the school's point of view, what they're saying is we're here to provide an education, and we know, because research shows, that the hours spent in a classroom translate into better exam results. On the other hand, conversations I've had with high school students, they're asking the question, if I want to go to the toilet, why shouldn't I be able to go to the toilet, you know? And I think what's interesting is that there's a big difference between 40 years ago when I was at secondary school, and now I think students are more likely to compare their rights with those of adults. But I've had people get in touch with me, young people, who've said they don't use the toilets during break because, first of all, they're queuing for so long that they don't actually get into the toilet. They say that the toilets are full of people who are vaping and they don't want to go in. And they say that they get bullied when they go into the toilets. So I think it's really good that students are pointing out these issues. And I think that there are big conversations that need to be had. What schools have to do is to look at what are the root causes of this deterioration and behaviour. And I think that this is something which the department at the moment, definitely I would say in terms of funding, probably doesn't have the resources to do. But having said that, the deterioration in behaviour at school is definitely an issue that has to be tackled as soon as possible, and resources are just going to have to be made available, because teachers have got in touch with me who've said that they've never seen the behavioural problems that they are seeing now post-COVID.
What do you think about Kerry Sharp and what she has to say? and I don't know whether perhaps you're involved in the education industry or that world. Is that true, that the problems are different, worse perhaps than they've ever been, or is it as it ever was? Is it a trend, or is it just a variation on a theme? I'd like to know, and it's everybody thinks their time at school was the best ever. Of course, we tend to filter out the bad bits, don't we, and concentrate on the bonus propaganda, the good bit of propaganda. But anyway, what do you think about it, and what can be done? Certainly, one thing is certain, that discipline in school cannot be enforced as it used to be. So anybody, you know, who says we should go back to corporal punishment, forget it. Just underline that and move on. It's not going to happen. Doesn't happen anymore. So how do you enforce discipline? Where does the discipline come from? It's the old age-old conundrum, really, in education. Does discipline come out of freedom, or does freedom come out of discipline? Any thoughts on the matter? By all means, text, email, call and WhatsApp. It's manifesting itself in lots of children vaping now. Vaping and associated behaviour with vaping. Used to be cigarettes, now it's vaping. At least you knew where you were with cigarettes. They were definitely bad for you. Lots of people think vaping isn't bad for you, but you don't quite know what you're buying. There was a thought yesterday that the post office should do a lot more, or the government should do a lot more. If anybody's ordering vapes via the internet, the post office can x-ray them and do something with them. Find out. Send somebody round. Why are you buying so many vapes? What's it for? To resell? To sell on? To use yourself? Lots of reputable vape sellers on the Isle of Man are sick to the back teeth of getting tarred with the same brush as people who aren't ethical. And as vaping was meant to be a way out of smoking, not a way into smoking, what do? I enjoy listening to the sixth formers, says 475. Can we hear the voice of those in the earlier years who maybe have less of an idea of what they want to do, or indeed what they can do on the Isle of Man? Good thought. Obviously the school broadcasts are done with the full consent and permission of the school authorities, so that's maybe go a little lower in the years from now on. But anyway, and also just something I want to point out, Man in Line is anxious to get out into the community. We have lots of fun out and about. And if you have a social club that's going to be available, if you want to, you know, bring the views of your particular social club and get them on the air, you'll need to be free between 12 and 1, between midday and 1 p.m, have a space we can get into and have some people with ideas and opinions. So if you run a club of people and you'd like to get your voices out on Man in Line, then by all means do get in touch. Email me, andywint@manxradio.com. Victoria said, well done to the pupils from St Ninian's for their intelligent remarks about housing, both private and rental. The government could learn a lot from them, says Victoria. It was interesting. Alex, the young woman who was talking about it yesterday, if you think she was 16 years of age and she's looking at, even now, an average starter price for a house of £360,000, a house, that is, not an apartment. But I just wonder what your view will be if you were 16 and looking at that. I think Camilla should come to Douglas once a month. Then at least Douglas would look clean all year round. The chewing gum thrown on the pavement should carry a heavy fine. It's pointless fitting new paving for it only to be defaced. They did do a very good job of cleaning Ridgeway Street. I think it's the cleanest street on the Isle of Man. Out with the jet washer. On and on and on. Howard's on now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just looking at your news on the internet this morning, Manx Care are hoping to secure funding for the Synaptic. But they're quoting a figure here for the 2 years of $18.3 million. Well, the government have been putting out it's $1.8 million. Now, either way, it's good value for money because people are being treated. And there's a lot of people have been up there and had treatment since this team have been coming over from, I think it's Scotland. But that's a big difference in quotes, both one's from Manx Care and the other one's from the government.
No, I can tell you, it's £18.3 million.
that is the, yeah, that's the one on today's figure. But as I say, up until this point, the government have been saying it's 1.8 million. So is this just a means of disguising the cost of it? I'm not begrudging the cost, because any treatment like that, and I've heard some excellent reports about these orthopedic, you know, the hip replacements and everything, and I wouldn't begrudge a penny of it, but I wish they would get their facts right, because it confuses the public.
Yeah, I mean, and also, in addition to orthopaedics, the amount of cataract operations that have been done.
Yes.
And of course, that revolutionises people's lives.
Oh, it does. Yeah. And, well, as you know, my wife was having to go away to Aintree for injections into the eye. This is since last year. But they brought that in-house. That's here now on the island. So the travelling procedure going across, it was the early hours of the morning, getting home at 9 o'clock at night. Well, this is because you were stuck in Liverpool, and the hospital over there couldn't fault it. And my wife and I went in the room talking to the consultant, and wife said, well, why don't they do it on the island? And the consultant said, well, I'm in discussion with the whoever it is that organises this. And then lo and behold, the next appointment, along with others, was in Nobles Hospital, which is a damn sight easier. Because you can drive from here, go up, have the treatment, and you'd be home within a couple of hours. Whereas you're at, well, you're a long time. You're at least 14 hours in Liverpool or travelling. And and it must cut down on the cost, because the number of people going away, even though the flights are on a contract price, it'll still be expensive. But, they seem to be, I don't know whether totally, but the act seems to be coming together slowly. And just as that chap said a minute ago about Camilla, it went through my mind that we have Manannan's cloak when any royalty come to the island. Well, we had a beautiful day yesterday, so I don't know what that speaks.
Oh, maybe Manannan was happy to see Camilla yesterday. Maybe it's
maybe that. Because she's over in Ireland this morning. She flew from here to Ireland last night, and apparently she's in Bangor doing the same thing tomorrow, today, and the forecast is not very good.
Oh my! Oh, is Bangor becoming a city?
Oh yes.
My word. Well, we have lots of listeners in Bangor and Northern Ireland, so let's say hello to Bangor City. All right.
Yeah, she was in Hillsborough House last night today.
Okay. All right. That's
okay.
Good. Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Manx Care and Synaptic, this Scottish company, have carried out more than 3,000 procedures in 2 years. 3,000 procedures into bringing over a private medical team to help reduce waiting list. As well, it's been a big plus for the Isle of Man. 3,000 procedures in cataract, hip, hernia operations. £18 million we've shelled out for it as well. Stats released by Manx Care show the partnership resulted in a 77% reduction of the day case waiting list for ophthalmology procedures. 2,150 completed. And I don't know whether you heard in the news, Lisa Wood, who's the clinical lead for Synaptic, the Scottish company, said lots of the team came as visitors but are liking the atmosphere of the Isle of Man. So you never know, that may actually entice them to live here. The treatment by the Scottish medical team was excellent. Unfortunately, the same couldn't be the same about the Manx team. Marie, you need to be a bit more specific to me. The Scottish medical team. Well done to the pupils for St Ninian's for those remarks. Enjoyed that yesterday. Wouldn't it be a good idea for one of the head teachers to make a name for themselves and to ban mobile phones from classrooms, as is being discussed across? There's no need for mobile phones to be in a classroom. If there's an emergency, the teacher is there. Phones, I think, should be handed in the morning to be collected later. It's a simple thing to do. Thanks for that, 490. I agree, it sounds simple. How do you do it? if by common consent it's a good thing that you shouldn't have smartphones in a classroom, who's going to keep them? Who's going to make... I mean, you know, there could be 400 students in a... You could end up with 400 phones being kept somewhere. They've got to be kept secure and safe, locked up perhaps. A giant mobile phone cloakroom where they can be kept. This whole issue, and again, there was a lot of sense talked by the students yesterday about social media, which by and large is a good and positive thing. But on the downside, social media can be dreadful. It can be an absolute sewer of emotions, bad language, bad behaviour, illicit images. So what do you do? If anything, social media has magnified good and bad behaviour. So it's good that it's magnified good behaviour, but the bad, it's a bit like Lamara Crane from Ramsey Commissioners was talking about these motion sensor cameras in Ramsey to stop people allowing their dog to foul or not picking up afterwards. It's always the majority that's published for, that's punished for the bad behaviour of the minority. So what do you think? And Paul's with us now. Hi, Paul.
Andy, you'll have to excuse me because I'm very nervous. I've never done this before. But you educated me last week about Knox. And I was ignorant of that. But what you did do, you brought my memory flooding back. Because where that pub and all that area stands, it used to be known as the Nursery Hotel. And the Nursery Hotel, during TT, was taken over by Hondas, or the bulk of it was taken over by Hondas. And my father, being a Honda agent in North Lincolnshire, and had ridden in the Clubmans for Douglas, and rode in the Manx once. And he used to take me up there, and they used to allow him to go in because he was so educated about bikes and the fact that he'd raced here. And it, as I say, brought it flooding back to me.
So when can you date when your memories are of the Nursery Hotel?
I can't, because I would only be about 10 or 11. And, of course, when I went round, I used to say to my dad, why is all these blokes wearing white gloves? And, of course, all the Japanese mechanics had to wear white gloves. Not because their hands would be dirty, but it was so they didn't affect the engines of the bikes. I'm 76, coming 77 now, so I think I would probably be 11. But as I say, Dad was main agent, well, not main agents, but agents in North Lincolnshire for Hondas. And as I say, he was very talented where it came to motorbikes and what have you.
Well, I know your memories will be shared by a lot of people because there's a lot of people, and I know at least two of your age, that specialised in collecting the badges that the Honda team used to give out at the time, and everybody was up there. And of course, this was a very sensitive time. It was only just a little more than 10 years after the Second War. So a Japanese for a Japanese team to be there, and I think it shows the power of the TT, because lots of very good relationships were formed because of the TT and Mr. Honda coming over.
Well, I actually have a letter somewhere in my possession here, a letter coming from Honda's in Japan, and it's signed Mr. Honda to Dad. And another rider that was up there was Walter Zeller, and he rode a BMW, and he gave me a tie pin. And of course, at the age of 11, that I wouldn't ever be able to find again now. But it was something so special to a young kid like me to be able to walk round that area where Hondas were working. And one thing about Hondas, which you see in cars and everything else now, Dad took me to the Honda cocktail party that used to be in the Majestic. And Hondas, they never, ever put one person, whether it's a rider or, and they used to bring their own chefs and their own surgeon, and they never put one any higher than the other. And I think that's something that we could all learn from. But as I say, at that age, it was absolutely breathtaking. It's something that you brought back through the Knox, and then I realised that's where we used to go. But as I say, for a young kid of my age then, 10 or 11, and I think, I'm not ever so sure, I think all that was pulled down 61, 62... Andy?
Yeah, my imagination's flying away, by the way. I'd hate to hear you when you're not nervous, Paul, because you're fantastic. My eyes are my imagination's flying away with the guys with white gloves, that's all. I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, they were white gloves. Yeah. And there was one, and I'm racking my brain to think what his name was, but there was one person ever in that era that wasn't Japanese, and I can't remember his name, but he was a tall guy, and I think he was English, but I wouldn't be certain.
Okay, well, the TT fans will be on the phone. Don't worry about that. Paul, it's fantastic to hear from you. We appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I as I say, I've never done this before, and it's through the help of a person, a good friend of mine, Tony, and we're actually church members together.
Good. All right. Paul, that's great. Thanks for calling today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Andy, for letting me come on.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. It's 12:30 on Manx Radio. Oh, I never thought I'd hear that. Walter Zeller. I think he's been dead 30-odd years now. Best years, I think, in the mid-1950s. But TT fans will know all about that. And I think there's been a book written about Soshiro Honda's trip to the Nursery Hotel and Honda, and as I mentioned, many, many people have got those Honda badges from back in the 1950s when he basically made it his one of his life's jobs to get Honda into the TT, win the TT, and look what happened. Interesting point that Paul made about the egalitarian nature of those Japanese manufacturing companies. Good to hear from you. Thanks also to a lady called Pat. Hi, Pat, who just said, you keep on telling us you're going to tell us the 67 gents toilets in Douglas. Why don't you do it? I'll tell you then. There were 67. We're talking about the lack of public toilets in and around Douglas. But David Downey from the Hyperbaric Chamber knows all about gents that were available in the 60s and 70s. Are you ready? Playland on Douglas Head, the Battery Pier, Douglas Head Steps, King Edward Pier, Bus Station, Block, Ridgeway Street, Bottom of Railway Hill, the Railway Station, the Old Market Hall, the New Market Hall, KG5, the Nook Cafe, Quarter Bridge, the Ridgeway Street Lane, Town Hall, Victory House, Rolls Office, Topwell Road Hill, Merton Bank, Nobles Hospital, A&E, Private Wing, Alexandra Wing, Kensington Bowls Club, Pulrose Golf Club, Timwell Street Lane, Museum, York Road, Nobles Park, Pavilion, Red Cafe, Grandstand Pit, Grandstand Car Park, Nobles Pitch and Putt, Tennis Courts at Little Switzerland, The Holiday Camp, Police Headquarters, Summerhill Glen, Horse Tram Terminal, Derby Castle Gardens, Promenade Switzerland, Crescent Pavilion, Palace Gardens, Villa Marina Broadway, Bowling Green, Band Room Gardens, Royal Hall, Arcade, Promenade Snooker Hall, Market Street Car Park, Lochprom Lane, Villiers Lane, Promenade Villiers and Sea Terminal. Are you following this? Are you writing them down? Premises where gents could be used without entering the business area of the property, the Villiers Arcade Street, Victoria Street, Dog's Home Pub, the Bus Station Crew Cafe, the Prospect Pub, St Mary's Church, Trinity Church, New Strand Back Door, Waterloo Pub Back Door, Falcon Buffet Bar, the Peking Chinese Back Door in Castle Street, the Central Front Bar, the Castle Mona, the Bowling Green Pub, Lock Parade Church and the Imperial Buildings. We don't have as many nowadays, do we?
Hi, this is Beth Nielsen-Chapman and I want to wish Manx Radio a fabulous 60th happy birthday.
He'll help keep your garden looking fine. He makes it easy and he saves you time. He'll take your grass. He's Johnny Trash.
Tired of endless trips to the tip? Fortnightly curb collections from Johnny Trash, the eco-friendly way to deal with garden waste. Sign up and get your free bin at johnnytrash.im or text your address to 477767.
He'll take your grass. He's Johnny Trash.
Everyone's more conscious of energy usage nowadays, so Manx Utilities has begun installing smart meters for standard domestic customers island-wide. With our Smart Living app available too, you'll be in control of tracking and managing your energy. No need to contact us, we'll be in touch when we're ready to fit your smart meter. Visit the Smarter Living page at manxutilities.im. Manx Utilities, delivering a smarter future.
Manx Drama Federation Easter Festival of Plays. Easter Sunday, the 31st of March. White Cobra from Northampton present Lilies on the Land. Comedy drama. The story of Britain's Women's Land Army of World War II, who all come together during Britain's darkest hour, determined to do their bit for king and country. For more details on all of the plays, go online to villagaiety.com or call the box office 600-555. Supported by Manx Radio.
Oh, hello. Come on in. Where do you think they've got the best social life on the island?
They have roots shows and fancy dresses and hot pot suppers and things.
But if you're out looking for romance, do be careful.
Poor little boys will be pushed into the mill race and the larger boys will take the girls home.
So, where is it?
I don't suppose you're going to tell me, are you? I said no.
But I'll tell you if you join me in the archive room tonight just after 6 o'clock, or pick up the podcast available immediately after broadcast at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
25 to 1 now. Eddie's with us. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Eddie. All right. Yeah, you had a guy in a few minutes ago reminiscing about the old nursery.
Yeah.
And the new Archie. Well, I worked on the new Archibald. I remember him knocking down the nursery, but I think he was a bit mistaken when he said early 60s. I think it was actually early 70s.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, late 60s, early 70s.
I'll tell you, the guy who actually built the new Archie was a fellow called Sean Craig, the builder. So his family would know when that was knocked down and rebuilt. But yeah, I had good memories from there as well, actually, the Honda lot. So, yep, a great, it's a great company.
Yeah, looking back at it now, as I say, it was a little, you know, more than 10 years after the Second War. And let's face it, the Japanese did some horrendous things in the Second War, which we all know about. And I don't know, perhaps people were more forgiving then because they were accepted. I mean, some people did bristle over it, apparently, but the Japanese team was very well accepted.
Well, they were indeed, and they did a lot for the Alaman. They pumped absolutely tons and tons of money into it.
Well, there was that. They did spend a fortune.
Well, yeah, but they actually did a lot for the technology as well. I can remember when they first came here, they had a somebody who probably say yes or no on this, but I seem to remember that they had a 50cc 12-cylinder motorbike. It sounded more like a wasp going down the road. But they were into the 50cc's before anything else. I think they moved up and up in classes. But I can remember the first teams coming here, and by gum, they were, like that guy said, they were absolute gentlemen, all of them. You know, they were, they couldn't bend over backwards to be nice to everybody, and they pumped money in left, right and centre for the Isle of Man. And look where it is now. The TT is so worldwide. It's a lot to do with Honda, and you know, not forgetting the other companies, of course, you know, the English companies, but Honda did more than anybody, I think.
So what part did you play in building the new Archie?
I was a brickie.
Oh, really?
Yep, yep. Myself, another old friend of mine, Albert Jones, and we were working for a fella called Sean Craig, a smashing fella builder. Yeah, it was a nice sight to be on that, actually. It was dead handy for our dinner as well, because we had the Mac Crowns right next door.
So what were the bricks like that were laid in the afternoon?
A little crooked.
Right. Thanks, Eddie.
Okay.
Cheers now. Got a message in from, this is a WhatsApp, a 369, just said, I know firsthand about toilets getting vandalised and toilet doors being broken and vaping, and sometimes students wandering around in halls when they should be in classes. It will be nice to get to the bottom of this. We all know there are sensitivities when dealing with young people and also with teachers' professional responsibilities, but I think, you know, if I can make a sweeping statement, we all want this to work out properly. We want the best education for young people so they can go on and live a full life. But we also want teachers to be treated properly as well. Times have changed for teachers. I mentioned the whole point about corporal punishment. We can't go back. Nobody really would want to go back to beating children. But the methods of enforcing discipline nowadays are different. And if we're having problems with badly behaved children that involve bullying or vaping or what have you, something's got to happen, hasn't it? So much for fortnightly bin collections, says Andy, sends me a photo of the lane between Albert Street and Mona Street. So much for the fortnightly bin collections. I bet they didn't show this to Camilla. It looks like a bit of a mess. Andy, thanks for that. Kay says, regarding your conversation yesterday with the students, there was only one person who would return to the Isle of Man when they finish university. Why can't the toilets be monitored in the schools to ensure that there's no vaping? Surely it will be cost effective. Interesting, Kay. How do you do it? Do you put cameras up? Well, why would you want cameras in a toilet? Do you have a security guard in there? Do you have a teacher in there on duty? How do we do it? Times are different. Protocols are different. Rules are different now for teachers. So how do you do that and put yourself in the shoes of the teachers? Is it something you want to do? And if there is particularly bad behaviour, gone are the days when you can expel students. It doesn't work like that nowadays. They get excluded. And then we'll come back. So I do hope we get to the bottom of this, and I do hope, certainly, that it's resolved. Why did it take another layer of management in the formation of Manx Care to come up with the Synaptic Partnership? Why were any of the many people employed previously under DHSC unable to come up with this, which wouldn't have cost the taxpayer millions to form Manx Cares? Have any lessons been learned? I think the Japanese mechanic, says Pete, was it Nobby Clark? People ask the schools to step up and take charge. When do they? People still complain. Let's get to Roy with us. Roy, the Oracle has got all the... Roy, it's good to have you along. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everybody. I was very interested to listen to that gentleman on before about Honda. And he quoted his age, and I'm round about that same. I'm actually 77. And it was 1959 when it was announced that Honda were coming to the island to compete in the TT. Shirakio Honda was adamant that he was going to compete. He'd made inquiries about it. He'd been in touch with the Mondial team to get information about what was all involved in producing a bike which would be competitive. And remember, when they came to the island, it was the Eclipse course which was in operation. So not only did they go to the nursery hotel well in advance, a couple of weeks they came before, and just circulated and circulated the 10.5 mile Eclipse course, which was part of the TT World Championship 1954 to 1959. So they in fact came to the island in 59, the last year off that. And the gentleman that he was looking for was, there was an American in charge of them called Bill Hunt. And they brought over with them Honda Bentley racers. John Dalton will be very familiar with those. And just circulated the Eclipse course. Got a few warnings from Jimmy Swindlehurst, who was the police officer in charge of Hong Kong's constabulary at that time, for going a bit quick and ignoring stop signs and stuff like that. But they were well received, there's no doubt about it. And we were fully, not probably not at 11 years of age, fully conversant with what had gone on in the war, as they called it. But we certainly did see something at school which was very kind of frightening in regard to somebody wearing a Honda hat, and got told in no uncertain terms to take it off. But that was just incidental, because as has been reported, they were great. I've still got the original Honda badge that I wore with pride from that particular era. Yeah. And I had a bit of a famous cousin called Jeff Cannell, and I spent a lot of time up in Nursery Avenue with him, and it was all kind of progress on finding out as much as we possibly could about the Hondas. And we actually watched the first ever Honda race bike. As we said, they'd circulated on these road-going bikes, and then we'd heard that the race bikes were due any day, and we heard up at the nursery hotel the sound of what were obviously race bikes getting fired up for the first ever time. And we were having our tea at number 69 Nursery Avenue. I looked at Jeff, he looked at me, and the next thing, we were off through the forest to get as near as possible. And both of us witnessed the first ever crash of a Honda on the Isle of Man. The mechanics were pushing the bikes down the main driveway, which was never used at all for access to the nursery. The nursery was always accessed by the top gate, and it's still there to this day, that entrance that goes in there. And certainly the mechanics were fired up, but they'd gone off down the drive. Well, that was all covered in moss and all what rooks do when they're nesting up above, and it was pretty grim, really. But they fired up two, but then the third one that came down, a bit too much front brake by the mechanic who was in charge of firing it up, and down it went. And we always often quote that sometimes when we're asked about the first ever crash of a Honda on the Isle of Man. It was on the driveway of the nursery hotel in Hong Kong.
I mean, they must have committed an absolute fortune to getting into the TT. What was the motivation behind it? I mean, obviously the motivation was to sell bikes, but I mean, did they think they could conquer the TT as quickly as they did?
I suppose, yeah, you've got to have faith in your product. I mean, to be fair, the Bentley was kind of outdated in many respects, and they had kind of you know, tubular frames and leading link forks on the front and various other things, which, but we know that during that period of time in 59, they made sure that every other machine that was on view up at the paddock was photographed. It was quite embarrassing, I would imagine, to see the Japanese with their high-quality cameras going round and sticking them up the exhausts of Gileras and MVs and all that was about at that particular time. There wasn't a great deal, because the World Championship had been deprived of big machinery in 57. So everybody was kind of starting anew, and they wanted to be ahead with the rest. And certainly the bikes at the time, the Ducatis and all that, were well photographed. And then they came back in 1960 with four-cylinder machines. They were told that the more cylinders you have, the better they would go. But they were quite slow in 1960. But then in 1961, somebody called Mike Hailwood, who you might have heard of before, gave Honda not only their first win in the 125 in 1961, but later on in the day went on to win the 250 as well. The 125 on a twin cylinder, which had been developed from the bikes of 1959. Rumour was it that they were so disappointed with the bikes that they threw them over the side of the boat on the way back and said, we're going to start anew. But whether that's legend or fact or not, I couldn't quote on that. But it seems to be that they've done quite well since.
Okay. Bright, fantastic hear from you. Thanks for calling today.
Much obliged. Cheers now.
Darius, 13 minutes before one on Manx Radio. And those memories of Honda in the late 1950s, I always remember late Adrian Earnshaw, former, of course, Isle of Man bank manager and MHK, always very proud of his Honda badges sitting outside the nursery hotel in the 1950s. And I guess there are many more too. If you've got some, and if you want to snap a photo, by all means send it to Manx Radio, studio at manxradio.com, or we're on the WhatsApp 166177.
Ready made or made to measure, you'll love our collections of curtains and blinds here at Lifestyle Furniture. Make your windows wonderful with our amazing range of styles and designs, including vibrant options from Ola Keeley, Sarah Miller, Voyage Maison and more. And with our made-to-measure service, you can be sure your new blinds and curtains are a perfect fit for your home. Give wow to your windows with Lifestyle Furniture. Find us at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills.
Whether you like live music, theatre, film, running around in circles pretending to be a superhero, you'll love Villa Gaiety. With Dragon's Castle Play Area, Broadway Cinema, Gaiety Theatre and the Villa Marina. Check out the upcoming events at villagaiety.com or call 600-555. Villa Gaiety, the island's premier entertainment venue.
Have you been invited to take part in the Household Income and Expenditure Survey? It's one of the most important surveys for our island because the information you provide is vital data for our island's financial planning. It helps us calculate our VAT revenue from the UK. Plus, it gives us a better understanding of the financial strains on residents so we can support those who are struggling. March is the last month you can take part. So visit gov.im/HIES now.
It's the business end of the season in the NWCFL Premier Division, and with just around 1 month remaining, FC Isle of Man remain on the charge to get as many points on the board as possible. The Ravens' latest test sees them host Ramsbottom United at the Bowl on Saturday night, with the visitors on the hunt for their first victory since early February. Join me, Rob Pritchard and Tony Meppen for FC Isle of Man versus Ramsbottom United, kicking off at 6 p.m. this Saturday. Manx Radio will be providing full live match commentary on our DAB and AM 1368 channels. Live coverage of FC Isle of Man on Manx Radio is supported by Celtic, investing in our community.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi to Hubert as well, who dropped me a note just to say, I've got Walter Zeller's autograph, and it's dated 1957, so I'm guessing Walter Zeller did the TT course in 1957. Thanks for that. And Vivian's on. Hi, Vivian.
Hiya. I left school and went as a cadet nurse at the Ramsey Cottage Hospital, and we had an awful lot of the Japanese in as patients. But we, the Manx or the English, didn't want to have anything to do with them, because that was 59. That was just after the war.
And was that what the patients didn't want to, or the other people?
The patients.
Oh, the patients didn't, okay.
The men in particular that had been in the war or knew a lot about it, they didn't want to associate with the Japanese.
What were the Japanese in for, Vivian?
Coming off their motorbike.
Oh, I see. Broken bones.
Yes, all sorts of things. They were very polite, very nice, but we wouldn't dare put the the two lots in the one ward.
My word. And how long were you at Ramsey Cottage Hospital?
Till I was 18. Then I had to move on. But it was a very interesting time because there weren't all the rules and regulations that they've got today, and we actually looked after people a lot better than what they do today.
Okay, all right,
that's
Vivian.
True, that. Okay,
good
bye.
To hear from you. Thanks for that. And Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hi. Yes, just very quickly about the Honda 50cc TT races. Just read you the specs on the Honda RC115 50cc that competed in the TT in 1965. 49.7cc, 4-valve air-cooled, 4-stroke, double overhead, camshaft, parallel twin, three-cylinder. So two cylinders, totaling 49.7cc. Top speed, 109 miles an hour.
Good grief.
Power, 14 to 16 horsepower, but this is why they were called WASPs. Redlined at 22,500 revs a minute. That must have been one hell of a noise.
It's also precision machining as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, obviously, while the chaps were going around in white suits with white gloves and, using watchmaker's tools on it. But I wonder if you've got a recording of it somewhere in the archives.
I wonder.
Yeah. It sounded mental.
My word. Where'd you get the information from, Bonzo?
Wikipedia.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The internet is great. It also had a 9-speed gearbox.
Crikey.
My
word.
It's amazing. No wonder it needed such engineering to make it work.
Good. All right. Thanks, Bonzo.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
Appreciate it. Look at that time. It's 7 minutes before one. According to the steam packet, different departure time today. Yes, today's departure from Heysham is at 10 to 2. The boat, I think, got into Heysham just after 12:30, leaving at 10 to 2, back to Douglas at 5:35 this evening. The Manxman leaves Heysham at 10 to 2, back at 5:35, and departing at 7:45 this evening. In Heysham at 11:30, the overnight departure is 2 o'clock, back to Douglas at 5:45. Tomorrow morning, Friday morning's departure is 8:45. To Heysham at 12:30. So just that the important thing is that the departure from Heysham is at 10 to 2 this afternoon. And also thanks to the person who said, never mind 67 gents public conveniences. Did you know there were 25 petrol stations in Douglas at one time? 25 petrol stations. I didn't, but if you know where they were, that'd be great. Hi to Amy, who just said, nobody's talked about what isn't happening in Peel. Proposals for that community hub with a cafe, bowling clubhouse and public toilets, designed to regenerate part of Peel Prom, right at the end of Peel Prom, have been rejected by the planners. Concerns had been raised that the designs didn't cater to the needs of the wider community. If you're in and around Peel, I don't know whether you saw this, there was an application for permission in principle for that area of Marine Parade. The planning committee basically said, well, the opinion was split, but they ultimately said no. And if you're in and around Peel, do you think it needs it at the moment? At the moment, I think it's a big home for mobile homes, isn't it? But we'll see. And thanks also to our friends at the Manx Development Corporation. Thanks to Claire Pullen, the project coordinator at the Manx Development Corporation. We've been asking Manx Development Corporation if they'd like to have a chat on Man in Line about their plans for the future. They've sent us a media release about what's happening at the old nurse's home on Westmoreland Road, what's going to happen in the future. So thanks to that. And the door is always open for Manx Development Corporation if they want to. Just tell us a bit more about what their plans are for the future. Apparently, nobody knew there was asbestos in the old nurse's home. My father was a POW in Japan at the end of the war. He taught me how to count in Japanese before I could count in English. I can still count in Japanese. Kindest regards, Daphne. Thank you, Daphne. Good to hear from you. 1948 to 1998 was Honda's 50th anniversary. Thank you, that from Texter 512. The toilets. These toilets were very much in the style of the French and made into cast iron, says one correspondent. I hope Roy's got all this history written down somewhere, says Jeff. And also, thank you, Susie, who dropped a note in to say, I'd just like to say it was fantastic to hear Jeff Cannell on Manx Radio. We're talking of Roy's cousin, Jeff Cannell. Great to hear. Throughout this year, our 60th anniversary year, you'll hear retrospective looks at some of the broadcasts since 1964. I don't know about a Honda 50, but if anybody has got a recording of the Honda 50, it'd be great to hear it. Well, can you imagine the noise that thing made? A week today, the day before Good Friday, we're live with a constituency man in line, Douglas Central MHK's Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas will be on. Maybe they'll talk about the Manx Development Corporation's plans for that big development in Domain Road and elsewhere. But anyway, that's next Thursday. Back with an open line tomorrow. Thanks to Howie Kane on the phones today.
WINT.